Your weekend's here. Thanks for spending some of it with Ken on CJAD 800.
A shot from the blue line. Here's Stapleton getting it away. It's back to the net. Barrington shoots it door! Cornwallé shot it in from Red Barrington. Cornwallé for Canada from Barrington. To give the Canadian team a 2-1 lead.
Morning, it's 8:20. That was just one of many key goals that the great Yvan Cornwallé was involved in during the historic Summit Series, which is celebrating its 50th anniversary all this month. That goal there was from Game 6, which was played 50 years ago tonight, September 24th, 1972. It was a must-win for Team Canada, and as we all know, the first of three straight wins in Moscow. An incredible time for hockey fans right across the country. It was absolutely gripping. Dave Stubbs has been writing about and looking back on the series with several articles at NHL.com, and he's on the line. Dave, good morning.
Good morning to you, Ken. Wow, by that point, Foster Hewitt actually almost had Cornwallé.
I wasn't going to bring
it
up.
Accent on the wrong syllable, right? But he almost had it right because at the very beginning, it was pretty fractured, I'll tell you. He got all the Russian names right, but somehow he just couldn't wrap his lips around Cornwallé.
Dave, we saw a smiling event on Thursday afternoon along with some of his former teammates in the House of Commons as Team Canada 72 was honored. That was a proud moment.
Sure was, Ken. 12 families were represented in Ottawa. They met the cabinet. They were guests in the House of Commons, as if they thought that their series was a bitter, ugly battle. They probably sat in on question period. And then Thursday evening, they met with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. Justin's father, Pierre, was Prime Minister in 1972, dropped the ceremonial face-off at the Montreal Forum. And to put this in context, Justin was 8 months old when that face-off was dropped.
Wow. Dave, what do you remember personally about watching, let's say, games 6, 7, and 8. They were weekday afternoon games, right?
They were. Game 8, actually, I had a science teacher, grade 9 at John Rennie High School in Pointe Claire, who was not a hockey fan, and he was not going to allow us to go to any kind of assembly or was not going to wheel the television set into the classroom. I mentioned this to my dad, and he said, if you come home at lunch hour, I'll be home today. If you come home at lunch hour and choose to not go back to class, I'll write you a note. So I went home, watched Game 8 with my father, probably ran up and down the street celebrating loudly after Game 8. And when I went back to school the next day, my dad gave me an excuse note, and all that it said was Game 8. So it was a magical, though, as you say. I mean, this was unlike anything we had ever seen in hockey before. None of the players ever knew they were going to be political pawns, as they became very quickly in this. So this was a series that was unlike anything we had seen before, and we'll never see anything like the Summit Series again.
We had a little black and white, a second television, the one in the living room, and of course a second little black and white portable TV that my older brother was borrowing during that week to take to work. He was working at Seagram's at the corner of Peel and St. Catherine there at the old Seagram's Castle, and he said the celebration after Game 8 that late afternoon in Montreal, he said it was incredible up there on the street at the corner.
Those of us too who were there to watch it, I mean, we remember watching this. The signal was uplinked from Moscow to satellite, and it went to Helsinki and then London, then back to Canada.
Yeah.
And the picture dropped out. It looked like cable that was sort of scrambling late at night. And, you know, you just sort of looked at this, and it occurred to you that 3 years earlier we had watched Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin walk on the moon, and the pictures were clearer coming from the lunar surface and seeing tranquility than they were from the Luzhniki Sports Palace in Moscow.
With Dave Stubbs this morning. Dave, there are so many great stories about Team Canada and players that really rose to the occasion and played incredible hockey. Some of them were unsung heroes, I guess, if you can put it that way. One of them, I want you to ask you about Brad Park, because up until then, he was, I guess, in the shadow of Bobby Orr, right? But the Summit Series was a real showcase for him.
Oh, absolutely. You know, best defenseman of his era, not named Bobby Orr. And Brad Park has been unsung for so much of his career. I actually have a piece on NHL.com coming tomorrow on Bradford Park. Douglas Bradford Park is his name. I'm getting email from Bradford Park saying, who the heck is this? Oh, Brad Park, right. So, you know what? It's almost miraculous that he even began the series, because in a scrimmage at Maple Leaf Gardens, Dennis Hull's coming down the left wing, winding up for a slap shot, and he said, here I look, and he said, the first thing that surprised me is that Yvan Cornwallé was back-checking. And he sort of laughs about that. And then he said, but then Yvan gets his stick in the way, and I see this puck rising, and I say, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. He turned his head. He took the puck flush in the left cheek, went down like a ton of bricks, was knocked out cold, was taken to hospital, spent the night in hospital. About 10:30, he said, the fog started to lift. He said, there were no TVs in the room, so I said to one of the nurses, if you got a backgammon board, why don't you bring it in, we'll play. He was released the next day, never missed a beat. And he is, trivia question, he is one of three members of Team Canada who played all 11 games in September. That would be the eight games in against the Russians in Canada and Moscow, then two exhibition games in Sweden and one in Czechoslovakia to end the whole thing. So, no, Brad was absolutely tremendous. And if you look at the video of game eight, he scored actually the first goal. It's been credited to Phil Esposito for 50 years, but Phil never touched the puck. The Russians swept the puck in behind Vladislav Tretiak off of a park rebound. And Brad still says that Phil owes me 50 years later.
With Dave Stubbs this morning, we're looking back on the 50th anniversary of the Summit Series. Dave, a couple of thoughts on the late Tony Esposito, who had big wins in Game 2. Imagine if we would have lost Game 2 in Toronto. And, of course, Game 7.
Yeah, I mean, Game 2 is huge, right? I mean, after Canada has been absolutely humiliated, I mean, they have no idea which end is up when they go to Toronto. They have to win that game. Well, that game will be remembered for an Evan Cornoyer goal, who scored the what would have been the game winner, and
Peter
Mahovlich's wonderful end from center ice, shorthanded dash. The Russians are up on a 5-on-3 power play, and if they score and that then becomes 2-2, who knows what happens. So, yeah, Tony was absolutely brilliant. And the funny thing about that, we lost Tony last August. I spoke with him on the 40th anniversary of the series, and he wanted no part really of ever being there. His brother Phil was asked by Harry Sinden and Alan Eagleson and finally Bobby Orr, look, you have to go. And Phil sort of said, look, if I went, Tony was going to go, because Tony was one of the great goalies. He'd already won the Calder Trophy as the most valuable rookie, or the best rookie in the league, and he'd won the Vezina Trophy. So here's a guy who went over, and you're right. That game two, he wins game two, and then if he does not win game seven, Dryden wins game six 50 years ago tonight. If that's irrelevant, if Tony doesn't win game seven, which puts it in Ken's hands to win game eight. So a miraculous comeback, really. And it's funny. A Polish newspaper said the Canadians, he thought they were on drugs in game five because they played so well. They lost. They blew a tire. They had four unanswered goals scored on them, but they commanded most of that game, and they went into the dressing room at the end of that game saying, we can beat these guys, and they went back, and they beat them three straight.
Absolutely. I want to play another clip of the great Yvan Cornoyer, and this is such a clutch goal. Fire that, Jimmy.
Park is trying to come out on the left side. A long pass to Phil Esposito going in. He shoots. Oh, right in front of the net. Esposito banged that. Here's another shot by Cornoyer. His goal! Canada has tied it up. The Canadian team grabbing each other there as a loose puck went around the net. And Canada tied it finally, 5-5.
Dave, I can still remember the screaming at Father McDonald High School in St. Laurent when we tied it up 5-5, because we went into that Game 8 third period down by 2.
Yeah, and you know what? I've spoken to a number of guys on Team Canada in the past month about this, and they said they went into the dressing room down 2, but they just had this quiet resolve. It's like, let's just go out and win this thing. And then about midway through the third period, I think the Russians said, look, if this winds up being a tie, we win based on goal differential, and that was news to Canada. And so they just said, okay, to heck with this. And they just started throwing everything at Tretiak. I mean, at one point you had a 2-on-1 break by defenseman Brad Park and Gary Bergman. I mean, defensemen are going in on a 2-on-1 break on the goalie. So they knew that they had to win this thing. And Cornoyer's goal was absolutely monumental. That was huge, huge. And Yvan kind of laughs about the fact. I kid him. I said, the most famous photo of you ever taken is of your back. And if you look at him, you will see that his jersey is cut almost at the top of his pants. Well, Yvan did that even with the Montreal Canadiens. He said he hated his jersey hanging down over his pants. He said he felt that it slowed him down. So you look at that, he said any time that Eddie Palchuk, the Canadiens trainer, handed him his sweater at the beginning of training camp, he handed him the sweater and a pair of scissors.
Yvan doesn't take a backseat, in my mind, to anyone on that team. I mean, it was a great team. But, boy, he was on the ice for the very first goal of the series, and he was on the ice for the very last goal of the series. He was involved in every big play.
Yeah, absolutely tremendous. And he said he knew that the Cold War had finally ended when, I guess, it was an autograph show that was happening in Toronto. Tretiak flew in, landed at Mirabel. Yvan picked him up, brought him to his house. They had a 4 or 5 hour layover before they went to Toronto, and it was a hot day, and Yvan said, look, I've got an extra pair of swim trunks if you want to hop in my pool. He said, thank heavens the trunks were red, and he said, I knew it was over when I'm looking at Vladislav Tretiak in my swimming pool in my backyard.
Dave, we've got to run. Just flashed in my mind when you were talking about Tretiak. Did the Montreal Canadiens at one point try to draft him?
Yeah, they tried to get him much later on. I think in 83 he was drafted. They decided to take a flyer on him, but there was no way he was going to come. Tretiak's father was in the military. But, I mean, Tretiak was reviled in Montreal in 72 for having played as he did against Team Canada. But then he played brilliantly in that New Year's Eve 1975 game. Was one of the three stars. He's been loved ever since. And he could not walk down St. Catherine Street today without being recognized by many, many people, I'll tell you.
All right, Dave Stubbs. Dave, always a pleasure. Thanks for doing this.
My pleasure, Ken. Thanks for having me.
It's 8:30. Here's Don Kagan-Fleming.